Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q1 FY24 earnings conference call of Suzlon Energy Limited, hosted by ICICI Securities. During this call, the company management may make certain statements which reflect their outlook for the future or which could be construed as forward-looking statements. These statements are based on management's current expectations and are associated with uncertainties and risks as fully detailed in the company's annual report, which may cause the actual results to differ. Hence, these statements must be reviewed in conjunction with the risks that the company faces. Thank you. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ashwani Sharma from ICICI Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of ICICI Securities, we welcome you to the Q1 FY24 earnings call of Suzlon Energy Limited. We have with us the top management of the company, being represented by Mr. J.P. Chalasani, Group CEO, and Mr. Himanshu Mody, Group CFO. I hand over the call now to the management for their opening remarks, post which we'll open the floor for Q&A. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Ashwani. Good afternoon to each one of you for joining our FY24 quarter one earnings call. I hope you had an opportunity to review our results and the investor presentation released a few hours back. We will now share with you an overview of the industry, and we will walk you through Q1 performance. We will then take your questions. With good policy initiatives from the government, the wind energy and renewable energy sector has got much-needed impetus. The 2030 GOI target of 500 GW of non-fossil-based, fossil fuel-based capacity includes a healthy mix of wind and solar capacities. So wind to the extent of 100 GW and solar to the extent of 300 GW. The idea is to have both solar and wind to coexist and not compete with each other, and this combination gives us the lowest cost of generation to meet the demand. This helps in diversity of generation sources and is also the healthy from the perspective of grid health. The fact that wind is also available during the late evening and night, when the power demand in India peaks, helps balance the power generation profile and also supports the grid. Initiatives like discontinuation of e-reverse auction for wind, new regime being on single-stage through-envelope closed-bid basis, is expected to lead to a better tariff discovery. There will also be a pooling of tariff for different states, which will reduce the average cost of procurement of power. The good part is that under the new bidding regime, wind capacity will come up in all eight windy states, significantly opening up the availability of land and evacuation infrastructure. The MNRE has also announced a renewable energy projects bidding trajectory of 50 GW per annum, which includes 10 GW of wind from FY24 to FY28. There is also a monthly RE bidding plan in place for FY24, which will be conducted through renewable energy implementing agencies like SECI, NHPC, NTPC, and SJVN. FY24 wind bid plan of 2.5 GW each by SECI, NTPC, NHPC, and SJVN, that's totaling to 10 GW. Hybrid projects and T&M market shall further drive up the demand for wind, which will be over and above the 10 GW per annum plan. Initiatives like ISTS waiver extension for COD of projects till June 2025 and gradual phasing thereafter will boost C&I segment and lead to huge demand for RE projects. Wind repowering potential of 25 GW and green hydrogen mission targets, RPO, RGO obligations, green open access regulations, etc., will further boost the sector. Our cumulative orders of 1,582 MW include order book as of June 30, 2023, of 1,433 MW plus orders announced subsequently of and subsequently 149 MW. 1,433 as of June 30 and 149 MW thereafter. This is also a well-diversified and healthy order book. Our priority going forward is to pursue quality orders with higher value and better margins. Our focus remains on executing and building our order book. Our service business continues to do well with 14.2 gigawatts capacity under our service. I would also want you to know about the business impact of cyclone, which hit Kutch and Saurashtra regions of Gujarat during June 2023. It also affected our OMS operations in a limited manner, and some of the customers' WTG along with transmission lines and other HT network were damaged. Restoration works are ongoing at the said wind farms, and these are expected to be completed soon. Net of expected insurance claims on a conservative basis, the company has provided for an expenditure of 20 crores during quarter one towards restoration expenditure. With the strong fundamentals and strong sectoral tailwinds, Suzlon is now well equipped to leverage the market opportunity arising from energy transition. I would now like to invite Himanshu to take you through our financial performance.
Thank you, JPC sir, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I would be using slide numbers 17 to 23 of our investor presentation, which has been uploaded on our website as the reference point for my discussion during this presentation. Q1 FY24 has seen us register consistent improvement in all our key parameters. Our balance sheet gets even more stronger, and our fundamentals have strengthened with a focus on bottom line based on performance. We are pleased to report that we are ending the quarter with a strong consolidated net worth of 1,297 crores. Our gross debt for the quarter stands at 1,806 crores, which is a substantial reduction from little over 13,000 crores in March 2020. Our net debt as of 30th June 2023 is 1,223 crores, resulting in a net debt to net worth ratio of 0.9, which is less than 1, which is quite healthy. Our consolidated PAT for Q1 FY24 before exceptional item stands at 93 crores. This is against Q1 PAT of the previous financial year FY23 before exceptional items was negative 37. And our Q4 PAT of FY23 was positive 68 crores. This is all before exceptional items. With continuous focus on deleveraging of the balance sheet in the last financial year, we have achieved a substantial reduction in net finance costs, which for Q1 of FY24 stands at 51 crores versus 148 crores in Q1 of the previous financial year, resulting in a substantial reduction of 66%. Being in the capital goods segment, it is important to look at the annual performance from the company rather than quarterly, because in our case, quarterly performances vary cyclically due to mix of orders that we are able to deliver, climatic conditions allowing us right of way for implementation of projects, installation and balance of plant activity. As a result of which, typically in the first half of any financial year, we're able to deliver about 30 to 35%, whereas H2 is the balance. The economy being on the strong footing, and as JPC sir said, sectoral tailwinds being even more stronger for a renewable focus on renewable energy, it all augurs well for Suzlon at this time. With that, I'd like to conclude my presentation, and we can now open the floor for any Q&A that the callers may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We We have the first question from the line of Abhineet Anand from Emkay Global Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. The first thing is on the standalone margin. If I see there has been a strong uptick on the gross margin side, whether we see QoQ or YoY. If you can just explain whether it is because of some good orders, product mix, or how is it?
So, hi, Abhineet, Himanshu. So, as I said in my opening remarks, I urge everyone to look at our overall annual performance rather than quarterly performance. Yes, you are right. There is an uptick in the Q1 margins at the contribution level. That is not necessarily representative of the margins that we may see for the next few quarters. So I would say that, you know, the margins that we saw in FY23 for the full year should be the benchmark or basis of what you assume for FY24. Of course, the endeavor at the management is to keep improving on those margins, and with improved supply chain, inventory levels, and increased focus on working capital, we are confident that we'd be able to improve our margins from FY23 onwards. But having said that, you should not assume the Q1 FY24 as the benchmark.
Okay. Secondly, sir, this 20 crore impact because of the cycling largely factor of the OMS margin, I'm assuming, right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so X of I think earlier you guys used to talk, you know, give a guidance of around 40% on the margin for OMS. That should be a fair assumption.
Yes, I think if you add back the 20 crores that, you know, we should for this exceptional, then we would be at about a little over 40% in operating margins.
Okay, and in terms of order pipeline, if you can see, if you can, you know, throw some light in terms of F24, obviously, you know, ordering for Suzlon has been good and some of the other players. So for the rest of the year, how is the pipeline looking? I understand there is a large area of industry, but from a pipeline perspective, next 3 to 6 months, how are the inquiries and all?
We are seeing, continue to see the traction in order pipelines. both from the bidding side, the, like, which is like utility PPA basis, and also we're looking at a large interest in terms of the C&S segment, including the retail segment. Obviously, there's a lot of interest, and the interest also is more on, the interest is also significant because of 3 megawatt having come out. So the momentum continues. So I would say that much. So, and we're looking at FY25 as well as there could be potentially moving at some orders which will get locked in even for beginning of FY26, because now the projects are, you know, like 24 to 30 months sort of a thing. Like latest SECI bids has got the awarded to some of the players. These things would have even some part of it coming in FY26 as well. So even those discussions are happening. So we are quite optimistic about the order pipeline and the interest being shown from all sections.
Thank you, sir. Those were my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amish Kanani from JM Financial Services PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Congrats on a good set of numbers. Sir, two questions. One, if you see the quarter execution looks relatively low vis-a-vis our order book. So if you can explain, you know, what are the challenges on the ground for execution and or, you know, I understand you said first half will be, you know, 30-35% of the overall. But, you know, with the situation the way it is, why should we execute so low when our order book is so high? So if you can give us some sense on the execution side. And second question, sir, is with this 3 megawatt order and also our orders being, you know, a mix of EPC versus non-EPC, if you can give us some sense of, you know, whether our execution can be much faster in the second half of this year. And, you know, what are the kind of, you know, maybe directionally, if not exact numbers, what are the margin differences at the gross margin level on the WTG side for, the 3 megawatt versus non-3 megawatt and, say, EPC versus non-EPC. If you can give us some color, that will be really helpful. Thanks.
Long list, I must say. On the execution side, I'm assuming when you call about execution, you're talking about supply, you're not talking about the commissioning. Because commissioning we did was 283 megawatt, which is significant. It's 25% of the market, what they've done in quarter one. And is it, I'm assuming it's, you're talking about supply, not about the commissioning. Am I right?
Yes, sir. 135 megawatt is what I think we are seeing.
Yeah.
Our order book.
There are two factors. The order book looks quite healthy, but if you see our the presentation as well, the slide 50% of it is for 3 megawatt orders. Okay, the supply of which will start in the quarter four of this year.
Sure.
And as far as the 2.1 megawatts are concerned, the supplies would depend upon when did you get the orders. So the orders would have been issued, and there the dispatch schedule comes from quarter two and quarter three and quarter four. So the normally the while you have an order, the site has to be ready, and you know they should be ready to accept the turbines. And when did you receive the order? From that angle is what you know the schedule happens. So most of this will come in Q3 and Q4, and Q4 gets added up because of 3 megawatt also starts coming in.
Okay.
Also, you know, you must keep in mind, as I said, you know, the climatic conditions, you know, especially during fag end of Q1 and early Q2 creates certain implementation hurdles on right of way, as a result of which H1 is, you know, the sort of sales is more skewed towards H2. To your point on margins, as I mentioned earlier, you know, you should assume FY23 margins, the gross margin, as something that we can definitely continue with. Whether we'd be able to better that or not would be, you know, only time will tell with more sort of inventory and working capital and supply chain getting streamlined. But that is the base case that you should assume.
Yeah, and your comparison of 3 megawatts and 2.1 megawatts from the margins perspective, obviously 2.1 megawatt is an established product where you know, you did the cost out and everything. 3 megawatt is coming now. In 3 megawatt, the not the turbine, mainly the BOP cost comes down. So therefore, you take advantage of that, and then maybe, you know, you can increase your pricing. So therefore, let's wait and see how the market plays. And it depends upon both internal factors of cost out, the initial rollout versus as we keep increasing the volumes, and the BOP cost reduction for the IPPs.
Sure. Sir, and about EPC versus non-EPC?
Yeah, right. Today is it's like 2/3 EPC and 1/3 of sort of a non-EPC type of a thing, but it's changing with some few new orders coming. I expect that, you know, it would remain as a 50-50 or, you know, 60-40 in terms of EPC you know, it's like it is not just the EPC and non-EPC, and we have categories like supply cum supervision alone. I know there's nothing called this thing. Some places we have supply and installation. Some places we have supply plus foundation plus installation, which everything connected with turbine. So there are different types of contracts are coming in now. And EPC is a pure EPC where we take the total, but not the turnkey. We have a different contracts for supply, POP, land, and etc. And each contract doesn't talk to other one. So that, you know, we get that, we don't have that cross contract LDs coming on.
Sure, sir. I have a few more, but I'll get back to the queue. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhaval from Giri Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yes, sir. So my question is, how much, what execution are we targeting for FY24?
Your guidance is, it depends upon what is your estimate for the country. So our guidance has always been, you know, we would be reaching around 30%, 25 to 30% of the total country capacity addition. That's what we did in quarter one. If you see our numbers, that we are about 25% of the total capacity addition happened in the Q1, and we expect to maintain that 25 to 30% as our market share in terms of commissioning.
Okay. And given this this current you know excessive rains and this flooding situation at a couple of places, is it causing any hindrance in our execution and, you know, I mean, in just our overall operations of the company?
It is in terms of, like, there are, we have a clients in that area, where they are supposed to do the balance of plant and all the work, and we just do the supply and erection. We are done the erection, but we are unable to commission because the balance of plants are not ready and other things are not ready. And some places where the erection is still balanced, the crane movement is getting impacted. There is some impact, definitely in Gujarat. But most of those projects are not most. None of them projects are actually EPC contracts. They're more of a supply cum erection or supply cum supervision. But commissioning is impacted, definitely. Otherwise, we could have done more than what we did in quarter one.
Interesting, interesting. Because in FY23, we executed 664 megawatt, and now versus that, we have a very healthy order book. Still, our Q1 numbers are not very exciting compared to the last year. So I just wanted to understand in terms of the profitability, what is it? Where are we? Why are we lower than the last year in the top line and also the margins?
Yeah, I answered the previous question. The overall order book is definitely one reference point. And if you look at overall order book, 50% of that is 3 megawatt orders, which the supply would start from quarter four. So suddenly you will see more quantity coming in because that's a 3 megawatt versus 2 megawatts. So therefore, ten turbines of supply of 20 megawatt versus 30 megawatt. But that supply happens, those orders are there, 50% of our order book is for that capacity. But the supply of that would commence in quarter four. So therefore, you will see the surge coming there. And second, as far as the 2 megawatt is concerned, while orders are there, as I said sometime back, it also depends upon when did we receive the order and what is the dispatch clearances we get from the clients, because many of these things are in their scope. And some places, the evacuation substation of Power Grid is getting delayed, so they want to readjust the timelines. So therefore, as we mentioned there, not just the numbers, the capacity also, you've seen it earlier as well. You can't really look at quarter by quarter and then say that this is what is going to be the annual performance. There'll be a number of factors.
Okay. So if I were to understand this 3 megawatt more clearly, so 50% of order book is 3 megawatt. And assume we do, say, maybe 800 megawatt of execution for the current year, for example. So 50% of that will happen in fourth quarter. Does it mean that?
No. Out of the existing order book, 50% is for 3 megawatt.
Correct.
Okay? So we are not saying therefore 800, the assumption, I'm just quoting your number.
Yes.
So 800, if we take it, 50% of that will be 3 megawatt. No, we're not saying that. So these two are two different things. The 3 megawatt supply will commence in quarter four, so therefore the volumes will significantly increase in quarter four because that's where it's coming in. Till then, we'll keep supplying 2 megawatts, but the ratio will not be 50-50 for this year. Order book is 50-50, but the ratio of 2 megawatt and 3 megawatt won't be 50-50 this year. 2 megawatt will be more and 3 megawatt will be less.
Correct. So a lot of it, 3 megawatt will be executed in Q4 this year, then Q1, Q2 of next year.
Yeah, and then FY25.
And 25, yeah.
So just to add, also to give you another factoid, so if you see FY22, the total deliveries in FY22 was 808 megawatts, and those were all 2 megawatt turbines. Now in Q1 of FY22, we did 116 megawatts of deliveries. I just leave those two data points to address your concerns.
Understood, understood. Okay. And so technically, the yield for the customer is higher, and also for us, the profitability should be a little higher in 3 megawatt turbine. So then your profitability also should be much better in 25 compared to 24.
Let's see. When we come 25, obviously, we will have these earning calls. We'll keep seeing the results. We'll keep discussing.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management will be able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak Poddar from Sapphire Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, please go ahead. We can hear you.
Yeah, thank you very much, sir, for taking my questions. So just I wanted to understand first up, so what sort of capacity addition at the industry level we are looking at maybe this year? Any sort of benchmark we have?
This is anybody's guess. So anything towards the north of 4 gigawatts. So
between, come again, north of?
4 gigawatts, and then up to 5 gigawatts is what is the estimate. And let's say the quarter one, if you look at it, quarter one, we did about 1140 megawatts.
So 1140 was the addition in the first quarter, right? And for the entire year, I could not get the number, sir.
It is between, anywhere between 4 to 5 gigawatts. Let's say 4.5
to 5. 4,000 to 5,000 megawatts, round about that. And
megawatts, not gigawatts.
Yeah, yeah. So
it is gigawatts, but it is megawatts.
Around 25 to 30% is the market share that we are looking at. So ideally, from 1000 to 1200 is the range that we might look at, right? I mean, ideally.
The simple calculation for your assumption. We gave you both.
Understood. And sir, do we see any risk that the 3 megawatt which is expected to start from fourth quarter, it might spill into FY25 itself and nothing comes in FY24?
No. No, we don't see anything because this is already type test certificate has come from the third party and it's already launched for the RLMM listing. Listing is also expected to come in this quarter. So then we are fully geared up from the manufacturing point of it. I don't think we see any problem
Understood this. And a clarification, you mentioned that FY23 should be the benchmark margin from FY24. So you're talking about the gross margins here or the EBITDA margins?
No, we're talking about the gross margins.
And so my final question is on your threshold margin. I mean, whenever we take any kind of orders, so what is the minimum threshold margins at the EBITDA level that we look at?
It varies. You can't really answer simply by saying that, order to order out. It depends upon number of things. Is it, we're just taking supply or we're taking supply come supervision, whatever risk we're taking it, which state it is. There are a number of other factors and which time of our production cycle it comes. It's not possible to say that, each order what margins are depending. There are a number of variables coming into picture.
And let me just clarify because, we've said this on a few occasions in this call. So when I say FY23 as a benchmark, that is for standalone contribution margins, not for the consolidated.
Standalone, right?
Yes.
Fair enough. I understood. Yeah, that's it from my side, sir. Thank you. All the very best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nikhil Abhyankar from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir, and thanks for the opportunity. And
good afternoon.
My first question is regarding, can you just brief us about the idea behind the fundraise that you have just announced? Because you have significantly reduced our debt in the last 3 years. So what is the rationale behind this fundraising now?
So the thought process essentially is, of course, there's gross debt of about 1800 crores, there are certain capex requirements plus, to ease out the working capital. Of course, there are certain covenants there are there from a lender perspective. So, when a lender looks at growth of a company, that will be very different from how an equity investor looks at. So long as that debt continues in the company at these levels, we would be tied to those covenants. Now the optionality before the company management is very simple, that we continue on a status quo basis, which is, no need to do any fundraise, keep performing whatever working capital we are able to generate, keep delivering basis that, we will still have a decent market share. But if we need to sort of have a good chance in getting, market share which is in excess of 30% as we go forward, I mean, not so much for FY24, but FY25, FY26 onwards, then it probably makes sense for us to look at some kind of an issuance that we are thinking of, which enables us to make the balance sheet debt light or near debt free, and also releases some cash for working capital and CapEx needs of the company over the next few quarters. So that is the intention of the management. Of course, the size and type of issuance will decide in the next few weeks, and based on that, as and when we make any progress or development, we will come back to you.
Understood. So the entire fundraising will be used for debt reduction, the current debt.
Well, it depends on the size of the issues. So as you know, we've taken a enabling approval from the board of a fundraise of up to 2,000 crores, and that is currently impending shareholder approval. So whether we do up to 2,000 means we could theoretically do full 2,000 or we could do less. That is something, you know, we will be deciding, as I said, over the next few weeks, and we'll come back to the markets accordingly.
Sure. So, and the final question regarding the C&I segment. So what is the kind of response we are getting from the industry, and which segments of the industry are really interested in this right now?
Right now, the between C&I and retail put together, whatever you call it, both are C&I, is our order book is more than 50, I think 50-55% is coming from that segment. Mm-hmm. The C&I segment is predominantly, one is smaller segment where, 25, 30, 50 megawatts. But there's a bigger segment of large industries where they have a captive requirement, which today is happening on fossil fuel. They want to replace that with renewables. Just for an example, giving few names like Aditya Birla Group or Tata Steel or the Sterlite, there are various big companies who are trying to do this. And my assumption is that this would further, in the next few years, not immediately, further go up, because once the hydrogen picks up, okay, but that's few years away anyway, we all know. But once this initial C&I segment of replacing the existing captive capacity with renewable gets fulfilled, let's say next couple of years, where you will see a significant uptick in terms of demand, I think the hydrogen would pick up by then. So, renewable energy for hydrogen, that again would be more or less like a C&I segment.
Understood, sir. That's all from my side, and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Vikram Sharma from Niveshaay Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. So first question, we play in meetings, we play in 90 lakhs per megawatt around.
Mr. Sharma, your audio is not clear. May we request you to use your handset to ask a question, please?
Hello?
Yes,
yeah.
Please continue.
Yeah. So I was asking, we claim 90 lakhs per megawatt around contribution, and we have fixed expenses around 500-550 crore around. So I wanted to know breakup of 500 crore fixed cost, and I also wanted to ask, it will remain same if we do like 3 gigawatt, if we once we add our 3 megawatt capabilities. So what will be fixed expenses for company per annum?
So let me just try and understand the question, because audio was a little faint. So in terms of contribution margins, as I've said, I'm not commenting on rupees lakhs, but one should assume mid-teens as a contribution margin, which is what we did in FY23. And as I said, we'll endeavor to improve on that, but you should not take that as an assumption. So far as fixed costs are concerned, yes, our fixed costs are approximately 500 crores on the manufacturing side. We won't be able to give a split of that, but that is, various corporate functions, our technology group, R&D team, manufacturing facilities, all put together. So we won't be able to provide a split on that. And, once we get 3 megawatt turbine into a serial production, we don't see a significant increase in the fixed costs other than what inflationary increases would normally be there.
And sir, second question, what will be our 3 megawatt plus capacity in FY25?
Let's say it's a statement. Right now, let's not get into that because the first requirement is that the water force stabilize and then look at the FY25 what would come. So the right now we are getting in different modes. It all depends upon what is the blade capacity. So that's where I want to leave it.
Okay. And last question on NM portfolio side, like what
is
our...
Sir, your voice is muffled. We are not able to understand what you're speaking.
Hello?
Sir, this is better. Please continue.
Yeah. So, I was asking what is our revenue per megawatt on O&M portfolio side and what is expenses on that side?
So, again, if you see the investor presentation, we have given details of the... each business and certain broad KPIs. So slide number 20 on the investor presentation, you will get the details, answers to your question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Priyesh Babaria from Max Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, sir, for the opportunity. And congratulations for the good set of numbers. So you just rightly mentioned that our fixed cost is around 500 crores or so, and it is expected to increase when we execute 3 megawatt portfolio. So can you please elaborate on the same?
No. That's not what we said. We didn't say the fixed cost will increase. We said, in fact, the fixed cost will not increase if we add the 3 megawatt portfolio from Q4, the only increase will be on account of normal inflationary cost increases. That's it. So 500 crores would not see an increase.
Okay. Okay. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vineet Kala from Xylem Investments. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So you had mentioned about these government orders of 2.5 gigawatts being floated by these four entities. Sir, recently NHPC mentioned that they would want to focus only on solar. So how do we see this and what is the level of commitments have these four entities already given on these orders to be floated?
See, directionally government said that we will do 50 gigawatt per year bidding and then out of that 10 gigawatt is for wind. That's one direction. Second thing is the pure solar is not the recommended route today because solar is already touched. As I said that last time also we discussed, when you go to 2030, as per the CEA detailed study, if you want to meet the grid demand, not talking about the captive demand, grid demand in 2030, least cost option they said is 300 gigawatts of solar and 100 gigawatts of wind. Obviously, we all know that in India, we are extremely sensitive to the tariff. And if that is the least cost option, whether you do it, pure solar, pure wind, ultimately you need to do based on RTC. So wind, especially now, if you see the last the few months, there is an uptick on the wind because the wind has to catch up. There is two types of hybridization. One happens at the project level, second happens at the grid level. Today, there is more push on the wind to do it. In fact, if you see that SECI had issued the RFS for 2.5 gigawatts of wind, NIT they issued, they're supposed to compare with RFS. So I think it is not, we always said it is not solar versus wind, it is solar and wind and what the required for grid stability plus which gives the least cost generation. So therefore directionally the government is also saying if you're at 43 gigawatts today, we need to go to 100 gigawatts of wind by 2030. So therefore we will first focus on that part of it. So if somebody is coming up with blue solar, so be it. But ultimately at the end of the day, this will meet the global study of 300 gigawatts of solar and 100 gigawatts of wind. Who does blue solar, who does pure wind is not an issue, but I think directionally this is where we're going to go. And obviously, when it comes to the C&I segment, again, they will do a hybrid depending upon the load profile of the captive load, and they will do the other calculations. And also, if you see the profile of wind in terms of the demand versus the profile of solar is different. They together is good. And if you look at pure wind-wise, that wind gives a better profile at the time of grid demand.
So like all of this put together and given our conversations with the OEMs, from 4 gigawatts of installations this year, how do we see next couple of years panning out, given that, you know, these 10 gigawatts worth of orders only from government and then you have C&I segment? So how do we see, you know, basically the installations going from the current levels?
Yeah, see, the thing what happens is that the 5-10 gigawatts of order, then fructification of order into a reality, because you're seeing even earlier orders, there's always a lag, how much awarded, how much commissioned, we all know the numbers. Okay. We should take these 10 gigawatts, we should take C&I, then at the end of it, all this put together, this X megawatts is what going to get, sort of fructifying in a year. The government is talking about, let's say, even if you take this target at 2030, you need to do about 7 to 8 gigawatts in a year, you know, if you're at 43 gigawatts today. So therefore, let's say the range of 7 to 8 gigawatts is what is the requirement. Then it depends upon the infrastructure, it depends upon the cranes availability and supply chain. When I say supply chain, not just the pure WTG, because component supply chain, looking at globally what's going to happen, all these things will play a role, but the government is hoping that we will reach 7 to 8 gigawatts shortly.
Fair enough, sir. So my last question is on the O&M segment at the margin. You mentioned like we had this cyclone impact of 20 crores. Even adjusting that, I mean, on a year-on-year basis, the EBIT margins are off by 10%. So what is the sustainable margin to look at? You mentioned 40%, but I mean, most, like, our competitor is doing a much better number than that. So I just wanted your view as to how to look at this segment and the sustainable margins thereof.
So on a, you know, margin, I would say that, you know, EBITDA margin would be a little over 40% is what one should assume. You know, the, given the scale of the capacity that we have, which is 14 gigawatts plus already installed, and, you know, of that close to about 13 gigawatts is revenue generating, whilst about close to 1 gigawatt is under warranty period still. So I would say that look at the margin profile as being 40%. I don't want to comment on competitor margins. That is, you know, your analysis from publicly available data. But from our perspective, that's what you should.
Yeah, we also expect you to look at the margins of comparative competition. Okay, that would give you the real test for this.
Fair enough. Sure.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, may we request you to limit your questions to 2 per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Dhaval from Giri Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello.
Yes.
Sir, my question is with regards to the managing the raw material volatility. So given we have a lot of bought out parts for our turbine, now from the time you say you have order book currently until the time you ship out that final turbine, and the steel price goes up by 20% and some other raw material goes up by whatever percent, how does that adjustment take place with regards to passing on? Because that can eat up a lot of your EBITDA.
Okay, the input cost for any component would depend upon 2 factors. One is their input price, that's the steel what you said, and second thing is the demand. These two actually make. As the steel is concerned, in all our contracts now it's a pass-through. So on the steel price, it's a pass-through in our contract. So therefore, that's we are hedged that way in the contract is. And as for the commodity is concerned, and as for the component, other prices is concerned, you know, you keep placing your orders, your relationships, so you manage. So therefore, we've been managing this for years. So how to do with vendors? It's not, but as for the steel price is concerned, it's a pass through in the contract.
Sir, the current participant has left the queue. We move on to the next question, which is from the line of Ishan Bhargava from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, sir. Thanks for the opportunity to ask the question. simple question. What is the capital expenditure that you envisage for the next 2 years?
You want a simple answer?
Yeah, I wish there was a simple answer to that. Next 2 years, I don't think, even we are in a position to project right now. But in this year, especially FY24, so our sustenance capex is about 100 crores, which we will certainly, of course, continue. In addition to the sustenance capex, we envisage an additional capex of a little over 200 crores to be incurred in FY24. And that's largely to adding further mold capacity of our 3 MW turbine.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have the next question from the line of Pradyumna Chaudhary from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. So I just wanted to understand on the O&M side, once we deliver a certain turbine, so usually when does the O&M revenue start coming from the same? What's the time horizon, time gap?
So from the commissioning date, depending on the contract, there is typically 2 to 3 years of warranty period, which is, free OMS that is built into the sales price of the turbine. So large, most of our contracts would have 3 years. So typically from, let's say, 37th month onward from commissioning is when the billing for O&M would start.
Understood. So suppose something is getting commissioned today, so we can assume that the revenue will start flowing in 2026. O&M revenue.
Yeah, depending upon which month. So suppose yes, if the July is done, and then obviously that is 6 months per month now.
And usually these contracts are for how long?
The contracts are normally for full life of the turbine. But then there are review clauses, so it varies. Somebody says 7 years, somebody says 10 years, somebody says 12 years, and segment-wise, retail different. But it's for the full life.
Even in the corporate side, that's the idea. Usually, it's for the full life, for at least 10-12 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Understood. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Faisal Super Hawa from HG Hawa and Company. Please go ahead.
Sir, we now have a promoter stake which is, one of the lowest in the corporate world. How will the promoters ever have any skin in the game, with such a low promoter stake? And secondly is that, if there is this huge explosion of orders that comes up from corporate India also going to green energy, we may again be, short of capital because, so will we again go towards the debt route or, you have something else in mind?
See, the first one, skin in the game, everyone knows what was skin in the game of Mr. Tulsi Tanti, not just in Ceylon, in the sector as well. Okay. So how they've been up and down, the stake is down for different reasons, because of the journey of the company and even today, the chairman and vice chairman are from the promoters and they have a completely deep interest and that is the one which they started. I don't think it just depends upon what is the stake. It's a question of extent of involvement and the commitment. And when you see the orders flowing, so obviously, also from the other industries, that what is, they all understand what is the commitment of the promoters to this. And on the second issue,
So to further add on to that, one must not forget that close to 250 crores has been pumped in by the promoters in the company in the last 2 years by way of rights and the preferential allotment. I don't think if they are willing to commit this kind of capital, so I don't think one should be wanting to question the commitment despite a low stake. So that's one. On your second point, if there's such an explosion of orders, would we really come back to the capital markets? Difficult to predict the future, but, I would say sitting here today, my best case assessment would be unlikely. because there are other pockets of assets within the company, which we would look at value add or monetization, which of course we've not lost our focus on. That is something will take precedence should such a capital raise be required in the future.
So what kind of capital would these assets be able to raise? And you feel that these assets would get a better price if there is an exclusion of orders?
Very difficult to say. I mean, what kind of capital raise? Definitely, I cannot answer your question. To your second point, logically, the answer is yes. I mean, if there are such tailwinds, then of course the answer is yes. But the first one, very difficult to answer.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Rohit Bahirwani from Vijit Global Securities Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity. Sir, can you please provide the value of orders in megawatt that you need to complete in the next 3 quarters, that is before 31st March 24?
No, see, we said that 1582 megawatts is the order book as on today, open order book, and we already done 135 megawatts in the quarter one. So the, and then we also said that the more than 50% of this is for the next year, the balance is for this year. So we won't be able to give a guidance of how much we will do it, but we will be able to work out approximately what it would be.
So you are saying more than 50% order book is for the next year? And less than 50% is for this year. Am I right?
50% is for next year, 50% is for this year.
Okay. So my second question is, though the WTG revenues are down, volumes are down, but the realization seem to have improved, which is around 6 CR per megawatt. So can we expect this to continue in future as well? Is this realization sustainable in future?
So I think the realization, again, I again said what I said in the opening remarks, that one should look at on a annual basis. The realization may have been up slightly in Q1, but maybe other than small fluctuations, we should be able to get close to those realizations. And of course, it also depends on the order mix of EPC, non-EPC. But all of that remaining same, realization should not waver much.
Okay. And my last question is, why has there been a decline in O&M PBIT if we compare both quarterly as well as on a YOY basis?
So again, when we said that there has been a one-time cost of about 20 crores in the O&M business, on account of the cyclone in Gujarat, that has largely led to the decline in Q1.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Suman from Rajiv Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. One of my questions has been previously answered, so I'll just ask a futuristic question. We see that offshore wind energy is coming to starting in India. So how is Suzlon taking his view on offshore wind energy? And the second is regarding the debt fundraising. When would you be taking the approval of shareholders for postal ballot? Any idea? Thank you.
Yeah, on the offshore, fine. There are talks about offshore, and obviously at some point in time it might come. Like we said earlier as well, we would be ready as and when India is going to be ready for offshore. Having said that, offshore is still a difficult proposition for India in terms of tariffs, because we are quite, as I said sometime back, we are extremely sensitive to the tariffs. The offshore abroad, like Europe and offshore in India, are different because the incremental generation versus incremental cost is a huge difference. Incremental generation from onshore to offshore is not very high, but incremental cost is very high. So the tariffs are expected to be very high. So therefore, while we might do some experimental offshore, but it's still in our view that it's a bit away for offshore. But having said that, if it picks up, we would be ready with offshore turbines.
Thanks a lot. Regarding my second, regarding the debt fund,
firstly, to clarify, the resolution is not for a debt fundraise. So that's number one. Secondly, the postal ballot has already gone, been dispatched about 2 weeks back to all the shareholders. So by first week of August is when we expect to receive approval from all the shareholders of the postal ballot.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot. That's all.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhaval from Giri Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry, my call got disconnected. Okay. So, continuing the question on this raw material thing, sir. So, if there's a sharp volatility of 15-20% kind of thing on the steel prices, so does that also hedge us in terms of our contracts for the pass on?
Answer is affirmative. Yes.
Okay, great. So my second question is on this 20 crore hit on the O&M side. If you can quantify, because that's a very large amount, and so where was this? What is it regarding? Regarding the cyclone, like what was that loss?
See, what happens in a cyclone? We got the we had the transmission line getting collapsed, which is actually supposed to be managed by the Gujarat government agency, but the turbines are down, they spend that money, so therefore their insurance coverage is not there. And the second, what happens is number of turbines, there will be small issues like water ingress and things like that, where you spend some money, but that the turbine wear insurance, it comes in the minimum detectable thing, so therefore the client doesn't get insurance. Wherever there's an insurance, we get it. This is net of that is what this 20 crores.
Okay. And sir, one clarification I wanted on the fundraising. So this fundraising, the equity fundraising will happen in the entire in the parent company, or something can happen, the chances of happening in the O&M subsidiary also?
So the resolution right now that has been moved for postal ballot approval by the equity shareholders is for equity issues at the parent company in the list group.
Okay. And sir, the fully diluted number of shares will be, as on today, will be 1267, right? The figure?
Yes, including for ESOPs. So about 20 crore shares have been approved by the shareholders on account of ESOPs. So after that, adding that 1267 is the right number. Assuming that all the ESOP shares will get vested and granted, which of course will happen over a period of time. Currently, other than ESOPs, about 1247 crore shares is the fully diluted capital, of which roughly about 5 crore shares still remain outstanding as partly paid, and about 1242 crore shares is fully paid up.
Okay. And sir, what are our plans for SE Forge in terms of any capex would be required there? Kind of opportunity what we are seeing, our place there?
Yeah, we expect significant opportunities for SE Forge. There is a little capex, but which can be met from their own revenue. We don't need to raise any separate capex. In SE Forge right now we're working on is the, like if you look at Quantel, we're looking at the productivity improvement, number of castings per day and things like that. So the
utilization, 19.
Yeah, because right now our utilization levels are very low, which is about 19-20% levels. So therefore there is significant surplus capacity available both in forging as well as foundry. We don't need the capex, plus also there is possibility of some operations outsourcing. Our focus is now on SE Forge to see that how do we actually capture the market much more. We are just about 2% of the total wind market globally. So we can supply to global wind players. So we're quite we focus on SE Forge now.
Okay. So that's 19-20% as of quarter one revenue. As per quarter one revenue is the utilization level.
Yeah, that's normally that's been the range for quite some time, not just the quarter one.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Priyansh, an individual investor.
Hello. My first question is regarding these ITST charges, which are going to be like incurred for the COD after 30 June 2025. So kindly advise that how this how Suzlon is gearing up for this scenario after 2 years.
No, it is not for us to gear up. It's basically for the IPP. So obviously there will be pressure for commissioning by 30th June 2025 to get 100% this thing. Thereafter it's also a tapering, which goes to 75, 50 and 25 depending upon when it's commissioning. It's not completely become zero post June 2025. So therefore the especially the C&I segment, there is a lot of urgency for for meeting this 100%, means taking advantage of this 100% available in ISPS.
Can you please speak slowly so that your voice is clear, sir?
Yeah, see, this 2025 June commissioning is for 100% available on ISPS charges.
Yeah.
For the life of the project.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it is not 1 and 0 after that. It tapers down to 75%, 50% and 25%.
Yeah.
So as we move ahead. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it becomes 25% charges, then 50% charges, then 75% charges.
Yeah.
Having said that, because the sunset clause for 100% is June 2025, there will be more pressure, there will be more orders, more pressure for commissioning the projects before that time, especially in the C&I segment.
No, that is totally understandable and that's totally implied, but the question is that do we have this pass-on clause? Suppose, for example, whatever order now we are receiving. So, everything may not be commissioned. Or suppose the order will be received after 6 months. So definitely it will stretch to the next, beyond June 25 also. So, do we have this clause like VAT, for example, GST, will we be able to pass on to the customer or not?
No. This, we have a contractual schedule, and as far as we are concerned, we have nothing to do with ISPS charges. So, we need to deliver as per the contractual schedule, and we don't take any liability with respect to the ISPS charges being. There could be different reasons their project gets delayed. So we don't take any responsibility for ISPS charges.
What I'm saying, sir, suppose if you're getting some order, for example, in the September 24th, for example. So definitely it will be commissioned beyond June 25th. So my question is that whatever we will commission beyond June 25th, the ITST will be recovered from the client or not? That's my question.
So sir, please understand our business model is to supply turbines to customers who are availing these ISPS benefits. So when the customer is placing an order to us, as per our delivery and commissioning schedule, we have to deliver and commission the turbine by a certain date. Now if we, in your example, if we get an order by September 24 and the order says that we have to deliver and commission the turbine by, let's say, March 25, then we have to do that. There is no question.
If we agree to that schedule,
and whether he is able to avail ISTS benefit or not is his problem, not ours.
So, means it's not a charge to us.
No, it is not. It is not. So, my suggestion would be you connect offline with the IR team. They'll explain this to you.
Okay.
Because it will require some detailed explanation.
No problem. Number two, sir, regarding this, our standalone financials. Since external finances are definitely not very good still, but for example, our PBT is in loss only, whereas our consolidated is in profit, for example. So what action or what corrective action we are taking to turn around our standalone financials, for example, pruning the cost or capacity, exceeding whatever, what is the action plan to bring the standalone profitability?
So we are working towards that. So we will, of course, keep coming back quarter on quarter. I would urge that because, there are, three different subsidiaries or rather two active subsidiaries that are adding to the consolidated profitability, and all businesses are very closely connected with each other. We urge you to look at the consolidated numbers. So far as standalone legal entity profitability is concerned, hopefully with time, we should get there, but very difficult for us to comment anything specific on that.
No, but like, yeah, with regard to console also, if you see the segment accounting, we are in almost in like not yeah, it's almost in our like segment result, which is you can say like gross profit or is only like 5 crore only profit of, and ultimately is loss only. The profit is coming only from the O&M. So what are we doing to have the product like sale, like generating profit from the product sale? And that also recently the raw material price was softened. So, but like this impact, we are not seeing much here. So the question is that our core is the product, for example, turbine. There we are not making profit. Even in the console also. The profit is coming, 135 crore is coming only from the O&M only. So what are we doing for that, sir? Like, why don't we reduce this, fixed cost? Or like, why don't we defer the ESOP? Because we are in losses, like we are doing like a little bit of profit, probably not consider the profit considering a lot of these things. Or even if you have a small profit, we are too liberal and give 20 crores, so for example, ESOP. So let us do something, something, for example, even in the case of Wipro, like this, the chairman of Wipro has taken 50% hit in their salary. Even the CEO has taken the hit in salary. So what I'm saying, let us do something so that for 1 year, 2 years, if we reduce the cost, payroll cost, ESOP cost or the other cost, at least the company can turn around. And like once it is turned around, definitely its value will be higher. And then like we can definitely reward the employees also.
Thank you. I think both sessions, we'll look at them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we take that as the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments. Over to you.
So I think thank you very much for attending the call and taking time out today. For any follow-up queries or questions, me or my IR team are available. You can reach out to us and our presentation is available on the website. We either will see you in person over the next few months or speak with you during the quarterly 2 call results. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of ICICI Securities, that concludes this conference call. We thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines.